I'm Lauren from Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to the Starling Tribune Newsroom in Star City. I am the Chief Editor, Stargate Pioneer, my friends. They call me SP. And your reporters for this third episode of Season 5 of the Starling Tribune are Chris.
I'm not going to kill you, but I can't guarantee you'll walk away from this.
I like walking, though. And reporter Michelle.
This guy is seriously underestimating my patience.
It's important for all superheroes and vigilantes to have patience. Hey, guys, this podcast is recorded on Thursday, the 20th of October, live on Geeks.live. We are all comic enthusiasts on this podcast in this newsroom, right, Chris?
That is a fact, good sir.
Michelle?
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, I bought a short box, so yeah.
We are all ramping up our comic collecting cred. Tonight, we'll be discussing this week's episode of Arrow, as well as news, interviews, articles, and announcements that have dropped in the last week that could impact future episodes of Arrow, as well as The Flash, Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow, and I'm not even going to say it. Yeah, I will. Constantine.
Ooh. Oh, my heart hurts again.
Stop. You hurt me.
And just a friendly reminder to everyone who is listening right now, there's going to be a lot of speculation that comes out tonight that's going to include a lot of information the showrunners and actors have shared in interviews. So even if we're throwing out these wild guesses and conspiracy theories as to what might happen, we might actually get something right from time to time. So consider yourselves warned. And don't forget, we also do like to geek out and talk about the latest DC comics every once in a while. So if you're trying to stay behind or stay ahead of comic book spoilers, might want to skip ahead of the comic book section of the show so that we don't inadvertently spoil you there.
If you're new to the show, thank you for searching us out on the internet and joining us. If you like our content, why don't you swing by our podcast network home at www.gonnageek.com, where you can find all of our past shows plus a ton of other geeky videos, podcasts, and articles all under the Gonna Geek Productions banner.
Thanks, guys! You know what? I'm just going to go ahead and break down this week's episode. It was entitled A Matter of Trust. It was the third episode of the fifth season here. The air date was Wednesday, October 19th, 2016, which coincidentally it was also the date of the third presidential debate in the U.S. elections. So if you got bored of that, you came over and watched Arrow. The director was Gregory Smith, who has 5 episodes of Arrow behind him, as well as 3 episodes of Legends of Tomorrow. The writers, no newbies to the Arrow. Ben Solokowski, who has 16 episodes of Arrow written and 2 episodes of The Flash. Also co-written by Emilio Ortega Aldrich, who has 6 episodes of Arrow. Guys, A Matter of Trust was definitely a move forward into the Arrow 5th season. What do you think the theme of the episode was, Michelle?
Well, it's all about trust. We have Green Arrow needing to trust Wild Dog and the rest of the team. We have Mayor Oliver Queen needing to trust Thea and the rest of his staff. And then we have flashback Ollie having to learn how to trust Anatoly when it comes to becoming the Bratva. So it's really Ollie needing to trust all the way.
And then Felicity needing to build a bridge of trust with Ragman as she reveals, yeah, I nuked your city.
What a way of saying that, Chris. I mean, that was such a heartfelt scene and the acting in that was great. And then you just say it like that.
Felicity had great acting. Ragman, on the other hand, he just stood there, stared, turned around, and left.
Well, what do you expect?
He was going to go rag up.
Yeah, I know.
Rag up. He doesn't suit up. He rags up.
You know, now, wait a minute. Here's someone, he's new to the team, and he's trying to get, you know, try to figure everything out. He's sort of surprised when they say that, you know, they're surprised Ollie's not hitting them. And then he hears that from someone that he's just, you know, and it's a shock. So I think it's good that he just, you know, took a breath and decided just to walk away.
Yeah, well, at least he didn't choke her. I'll give him that.
Wait, yet.
Yeah, true. And the rags just do what they do. He doesn't really control them, as he confesses to Fair Play later. I will add one more trust in there, in that Diggle does not trust himself.
Yeah, that's a valid point.
Very valid.
So all about trust this episode. There were some amazing fight scenes in this episode. Oh my gosh, the severing the tendons. I mean, that's how you take somebody down. You incapacitate them. It doesn't matter if they feel it or not. At least they can't move.
This is true. I mean, and let's be honest. There's some good fight chemistry between Stephen Amell and Cody Rhodes. Going back to the fact that, I don't know, they fought in the ring in SummerSlam last year for a WWE pay-per-view. It was awesome to get round two of Stardust v. Green Arrow.
I was watching the premiere episode again while I was on the treadmill tonight before I watched this episode, and I commented on it last week. The stunt man that is acting in the place of Tobias Church is very good. Don't get me wrong. He's amazing in what he does, but it's just not how Tobias would actually move. And this fight between Stardust and Ollie or Green Arrow was completely more believable to me just because it was plausible. Tobias, not so much. I just don't buy that the man can move that fast.
Well, and I think it also helped that I believe Cody Rhodes in some interviews had said he tried to do as many of the stunts as they would let him do, too. With his experience in professional wrestling, he can probably do a bit more stunts than just your regular actor guy could, who doesn't have as much experience with that. Not to say Stephen Amell can't now, because he's been doing as many as they'll let him do forever. So my guess is we didn't have a ton of stunt work that was done by stunt actors in this case, and these two probably wanted to square off.
There was also the standard issue, superhero, slow-mo explosion walk-away.
I'm kind of tired of it, though, guys. It's typical trope you see all the time.
Here's the thing. First of all, the lead-up to it, you had Ollie, you know, shoot that arrow into Stardust and, like, pull him up. And then they had this slow-mo, like, toward each other, toward the fight thing. And it was really cool. So, you know what? Because of that, I forgave the slow-mo kaboom celebration that the team did something together. I think that's kind of what it was. The team did great. They had their own fireworks and they got to walk slowly toward the camera like the superheroes they are.
So I had two thoughts with the slow motion one. First, I flashed back to the Justice League episode of Smallville from like season 5, and I was like, huh, at least it's a little bit better than that explosion. And then the next thing was the Funny or Die video that Will Ferrell did, that's Cool Guys Don't Look at Explosions, for one of the Emmy Awards, which is just a montage of all these explosions and people just walking away from them and not even caring. I was like, I hope they do a new one. They include Arrow in it this time.
I know, that would be awesome. I love that video. That would definitely, it needs to be redone because there's so many shows and movies that do that these days. So
it's true. Can we go back to Samson a second? The Stardust fight. I love the fact, and I'm going to use a wrestling term here, that Stardust completely no-sold getting shot because he couldn't feel anything. And for those of you that are wrestling fans, no-sold basically means they take the hit and they don't act like they did. I mean, it was perfectly well done. He was just kind of like, oh, I got shot. Let me yank this arrow out of my shoulder. And you're just like, oh my God, that looks incredibly terrible. Well done.
Yeah, I have to say, this season of Arrow has definitely stepped it back up with the fight choreography and getting back to the roots of the show with the street fighting. Again, not Daredevil, but it's the Arrow that we've all loved. I love this sort of stuff. And they make it as real as they can, and I'm glad that we're back to this versus Elicity.
Definitely.
So, Chris, you and I were big advocates of the flashbacks way back in like season two and season one. What are you thinking about them now?
They're better, but I think it's mostly because I really like Anatoly. It's kind of a flashback to one of my favorite characters from all the flashbacks being around again. So I do like the fact Anatoly's involved again. And I like the fact the Bratva wasn't quite what we thought it was after the last episode. We're like, these guys are brutal. They just all had Oliver kill four other dudes, basically, so he could become part of it. And then you realize, no, there's actually a method to their madness. These guys are all bad dudes. And the Bratva was just cleaning up the streets and using Oliver as the tool to do it. And I was like, well done. I kind of like this twist then.
Respect them a little bit, right?
Da.
I was thinking about the whole thing along the way, thinking, you know, one of the reasons why the flashbacks are working so well is because that we have backstory into the characters now. This is 5 years into the show. Season one, we didn't have it. Season two, we barely had it. Now we know what the Omezo is. They reference it. They reference the captivity on board that ship. So you're really getting that. And they reference the fact that Ollie went back to the island not once, but twice. Went back to the island once. He was there twice. So, and he's got to go back again a third time. We know that. So there's all this rich history, and it just makes it better for me. Michelle, what do you think of the flashbacks this season as in relation to the show, this episode, as well as the history of the flashbacks?
The fact that we knew that they had to go to Russia really gives the writers a purpose with the flashbacks now. You know, Anatoly came along and he said, you know what? You all know what I've been through. You're the only one. And, you know, like Chris said, that connection. And so it's like the writers get to explore that. They have a direction. They know exactly where the flashbacks need to end so they can actually plot them out. And because they can do that, they've been able to really connect each of the current episodes right with that flashback. Three episodes in a row, the flashbacks have really tied in together. I'm very impressed.
This is what made the show so appealing back in season two. Can't overstate it, can't state it enough. And I'm liking where it's going. We'll see what happens like in January, February, because that's when the rails came off last season. So I hope they have more of a story than just the mid-season finale. Diggle with his cellmate. Michelle, you got to talk about the cellmate. What was going on there?
Poor Diggle. Diggle's in prison, and then all of a sudden, he goes in, and he's like, you? And there is Deadshot. I love the fact when Diggle is like, wait, how can you be alive? Wait, we didn't find your body. And I'm like, oh, yes, that is the pure comic book excuse for how to resurrect the dead. We didn't see the body. But then it goes on, and then he's talking to him, and then Lila comes, and then it's like he turns, and then he's not there. And you realize he's been talking to himself the whole time. Whoa.
Very powerful. They swerved me at first. I looked at that, and he was there. I was like, oh, Flashpoint. Maybe Flashpoint brought Deadshot back. Because remember, they did make a point of saying Flashpoint's going to affect Diggle more than anyone else in Arrow. But I kind of like the fact it was all in his head. It kind of shows just what Diggle's grappling with. And it reminded me of a really good episode of Deep Space Nine where Sisko and Gul Dukat are trapped on a planet together. And Gul Dukat is hallucinating all of these other guys as he tries to work out his feelings over the death of his daughter and the fall of Deep Space Nine and becomes more and more gradually unhinged. So I wonder if we'll see more of this with Diggle and he becomes a little more unhinged.
I totally agree. I thought Deadshot was back because of Flashpoint. Totally got suckered in on that. And then when I didn't see Deadshot, my mind immediately went to, well, we do have magic in this universe. Maybe they used magic to bring him in and out to maybe Lila is trying to give him some help or something, but no.
And that's valid because they've made a point in every episode this season so far of establishing the fact, well, we know magic's around or lines to that effect. So they are not letting up on the fact that magic exists, even if we aren't seeing it in action lately.
We're getting so many, you know, this Flashpoint thing has you guessing just like in season one about what's going on in the background. We find out basically that Lila is John Jr.'s mom. So Diggle and Lila were together prior to him departing. I would guess. Would that be the way to take it, Michelle?
First off, I think I called it because he says, I love you to Lila. And then he says, tell John Jr. And I think that's what happened. I don't think they got divorced. And that's their kid. That's what I'm thinking has happened.
Oh, I hope that's the case. Because if they didn't get divorced, that means the creepy I want to date my sister-in-law from season one thing is no longer canon.
That's true. And this also leaves the door open for baby Sarah, because Flashpoint, perhaps just a little later on, they could have baby Sarah be John Jr.'s sister. So I'm hoping we can get baby Sarah back in some way, because she just doesn't deserve to just be erased. She's so cute.
True. There is that. I was thinking about that, though. In the grand scheme of things, Sarah is back. She's not dead anymore. So the name Sarah has less and less of a meaning than it did originally. Now, I get the cuteness and I get the fact that the kid has been through everything, including being on the back of a motorcycle, escaping and being carted around last season. But so she's already a superhero, but we don't know if she exists now or not. So we'll just see.
Yep. Because Lila wants to break him out of prison. So now I wonder if next week we're going to find out if she's connected to Argus or not.
Why did she go to Oliver? If I was going to break somebody out of prison, I'd go to Barry Allen.
Maybe she doesn't know Barry anymore as a consequence of Flashpoint. I don't know.
Flashpoint.
Or it could be because plot.
Well, also, who would you trust? Would you trust some speed guy or would you trust the man who's become Diggle's brother?
I trust Quentin.
As long as he's not drinking.
Well, yeah, because didn't he input a virus into the computer systems before when he was allegedly working with Dark last year, right?
Yeah, but is Diggle in Iron Heights? I didn't say what prison he was in. So.
No, they did.
In Leavenworth.
Well, they didn't say Leavenworth, did they? They said at a military prison somewhere. I don't think they said Leavenworth, but it's meant to be like Leavenworth.
Then we don't know if it's in Star City, which means whatever virus is that was let loose over a year ago might not be even in play anymore.
Yeah, true enough. So let's move on to Thea. She had a big arc in this episode. She screwed up and she, for somebody that was trained by a League of Assassin member and has worked with in a vigilante squad, she has very poor street sense to go to a reporter and just say, can you retract the story? I'm the one who did it.
Well, she's 22 years old. 21, 22.
She came back strong at the end of the episode. You get to fool me once, but that's it. Still, I'm like,
she is Moira Queen's daughter. Let's keep that in mind.
Whoa, now, hold on. Hold on. Yes, she's young. Also, she's basically being mayor. Like, at the beginning, Ollie's like, what do you mean he hired? We didn't discuss it. And it was like, yeah, that's what, like, the five voicemail messages were, you know? He's not answering her calls. He's not around. So she's like, I got to make decisions. And she doesn't have the mayor there. She's like, well, I'm not the mayor, but I kind of got to be. So I imagine she's probably exhausted and having to do all of this. So, you know.
You know what else we had confirmed in this episode? That Oliver is elected. So the elections happened before the season started and he was elected mayor.
And I think, in all fairness to Oliver, it seems like at the end of this episode, he's making more of a commitment to go forward being mayor. He's beginning that realization that he's accountable, whether it's his Green Arrow, whether it's Oliver Queen. And it's a pretty good speech he gives at the end where he basically says, everything that happens here is because I say so, and we know it's whether it is or not, but he takes the blame for anything that goes on. So I kind of think now that the team, he can sort of trust them to go out and do stuff, you might see a little more competent Mayor Ollie.
This whole thing is going to blow up in his face because stuff is going to happen, especially with the district attorney.
You mean Prometheus?
Ooh, you think you've got it.
I'm calling my shot right now.
Yeah. Michelle, you want to return fire on Chris on that?
First off, the district attorney in the comic books becomes Vigilante, which is a separate character from Prometheus. So Michelle would like to present her evidence that, again, Prometheus could be Tommy Merlin. I know we don't like this. I do have a list of suspects, and I'm sort of getting together, but we can't cross Tommy off of that list.
There you go. We have a Tommy lover and we have somebody pointing directly to...
Whoa. I did not say I was a Tommy lover.
Oh, yeah. You are totally a Tommy lover. If Chris loves Laurel, you love Tommy.
If I have to love Laurel, you're taking this hit because I don't want to be the only one that has to love a character they hate.
Are you saying I have to say hashtag no Tommy, no Arrow?
Yes! Yeah. She did. You've now earned your spot in the clamor world.
Welcome to hell.
Oh, I'm glad I have a roommate in you, Chris.
I'm driving the bus.
Backing it up, too. Beep, beep, beep. So, yes, you know that is going to backfire on Oliver, Green Arrow, both, probably at the same time, and he's going to run into significant troubles. We've speculated that Thea might be mayor before this whole thing is over. We'll see how that goes. And Quentin's now in play, too. Quentin as the deputy mayor, as long as he's sober, I think it's a great call.
Called it.
Totally did.
For the audio listener, I'm doing my called it dance again, because if you go back and you listen, I called it.
We can roll back the tape, but we're just not going to do it right now. So what do you guys think of Curtis's costume?
It's a work in progress, and it is, the face paint is straight out of the comics.
He's so adorable. He's actually adorkable. I actually elevated him to that. I sort of put it out there in the Twitterverse, like, who do we think is more adorkable, Curtis or Kara from Supergirl? Because they are just, you know, he was all like, let's suit up and everything.
No, you don't get to say that. No, everybody, that's him. My bad. That's Oliver. Let Ollie do it. Okay, he gets to say suit up. That's right. That was funny. And then the phone calls with Paul, and he is the stumbling person that we miss with Felicity, because we're not going to get that with Felicity. She's going to have little quips here and there, but she's not going to be the oops, I stumbled on it individual this season. I haven't seen it written that way. She hasn't performed it that way. Her character has evolved from that.
Yeah, she's the mommy to Ollie's daddy, you know, like there was that scene near the end where those two were side by side and they're looking at the new team like, oh, look at our kids. They're growing up.
Right. Well, and the kids actually call them mommy and daddy, you know, when they're going off to do some recon. Don't tell mommy and daddy.
No. And it's like, Felicity's back. Stop it.
No. One of the things about I like about Felicity is like at the beginning of the episode, she's like, okay, everybody, now watch how Oliver's doing this. Watch what Green Arrow does. You know, information's important. I'm going to make a DVD of this. You guys are going to watch it. You're going to play it, you know, break it down play by play. And she's the one that's stepping up to Oliver going, you need to be a leader. You are responsible for what your team does. She's standing up and telling him like it is. This is the type of Felicity I like, not romantic Felicity. I like team captain Felicity.
Right. And as I mentioned before, I watched the season premiere again tonight. There was that scene with Diggle at the end when they're Skyping back and forth. And by the way, nice webcam, Diggle. I noticed that this time. Oliver was using his laptop. Diggle was using the advanced webcam that kind of looked like a modified C920 Logitech camera.
Just a little bit.
Which all three of us are using right now. But in any event, the one thing that I remember Oliver talking about with Diggle is that he was not over Felicity yet. And I don't think he is. I mean, he's not dating anybody. He's not seen. There's no romantic interest. I think he's still pining after her a little bit. I think they're going to have a moment. Maybe next week, maybe sometime before the mid-season finale. And I don't think it's going to close it off. I think it's going to perpetrate beyond that. I don't think we're done with Felicity yet.
Well, it's episode 5, they said in interviews, is when he finds out about her new boyfriend. And I'm sure there'll be an interesting reaction there. And then sometime after that, he supposedly figures out that the boyfriend, that is, finds out she's working with the Green Arrow. So you could see some drama come out of that. But as for Oliver not dating, I think it's just more of a matter, how does he have the time?
Yeah. I mean, he's mayor. He's Green Arrow. I'm surprised he can sleep.
Well, he's the mayor, right? So this is kind of like the relationship that Wild Dog and Oliver have. Are they ever going to get together on the same page?
Yes. I think because Wild Dog's going to be another version of Diggle is how I'm looking at it right now. And eventually they'll be on the same page. And once they learn that they can trust each other and work together, I think you'll see them be pretty tight. I don't know if they'll necessarily be like brothers in arms like you see Diggle and Oliver were, but I think they'll get on the same page eventually. They both like hockey masks after all.
That was a nice comment in there. I was 100% sure that was a homage to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, right?
Correct. Casey Jones.
Yeah, there you go. Michelle, what do we got next on the docket?
Artemis. She has a mask. Man, they need to get that girl something to do. I mean, she's this, you know, like Wild Dog's getting this personality, has this, you know, thing with Oliver. Curtis already has that background. Ragman has the really cool rags. And then there's the chick. And do something with her. Is, you know, Artemis is like the hunter. Like, is she going to have a bow? They got to give her something to do.
So I'm familiar with the character of Artemis from the Young Justice cartoon, where she was Oliver Queen's sidekick and a badass archer. My thought is at some point, she's going to start learning how to use a bow, just like half of his other sidekicks have.
At the end, the whole team goes down into the Arrow Cave. Yep, we called it. Fair Play calls it the Arrow Cave.
It's canon now.
And they see all the costumes, the four costumes there for Diggle, for Speedy, for Laurel, and for Oliver. One of the costumes is up for grabs right now. And remember what Laurel said, don't let me be the last canary. So somewhere along the line, they're going to get another canary. Don't know who that's going to be. Don't know when, what, how. Could Sarah come back? I don't know. But I think they're moving on that direction. And I don't know. What do you guys think? Are they going to just expand the costume case to include the newbies and then have, what, 12 of them or something like that? Or are they going to start replacing some of these?
Personal opinion, they'll probably start putting more out there. There have also been some interviews that I think Berlanti and Guggenheim did where they said they have to earn getting their costumes going forward. So everything we've seen now is not the final version of what they have. So somewhere around the time they get the final versions of their costumes, I would expect to see some new fancy display cases. Because you know they've got some in the back, because at one point in time they had one set up for Barry also.
Oh, that's right.
They did. So I was thinking about this. The Stardust crew, they want to take the city back from Tobias Church. Is that necessarily a bad thing?
I'd rather have one crazy guy in charge instead of an army of people that feel no pain and are unhinged because of it. We had that almost happen with Slade Wilson and the Mirakuru back in season 2, and that was bad news.
Yeah. All right. So your preference is just one Gowanna crazy person in charge of the whole city. So you want Tobias.
Well, yeah.
We don't know if Tobias is crazy. He's intelligent. He knows how to consolidate power.
Okay. He's intelligent. So again, going back to the first episode, when Oliver was in captivity, the Green Arrow didn't show up. When Oliver escaped, the Green Arrow comes back. That, if he's intelligent, that might get me thinking.
Magic tattoo, man. Magic tattoo. No, I don't know.
The magic tattoo comes back yet again. And then we get an episode of Constantine, and then Constantine gets renewed.
So you could theoretically try and spin it that way, because it wouldn't be unprecedented in the world of comics, because let me take you to the Marvel side of the house temporarily. In the Civil War event in 2006, Spider-Man unmasks on public television and tells the world since he's been 15 years old, he's been Spider-Man and his name is Peter Parker. So there's a whole arc for like 3 years where everyone knows he's Spider-Man, and eventually they undo it with means I don't want to talk about here that's ridiculous, but there is basically a spell that is cast so that everyone forgets that Peter Parker was Spider-Man. And in order for Peter to actually tell people who he truly is, he has to take the mask off and tell them, because the residual effect of the spell basically means that his face gets all blurry when he's in the costume. They can't make connections to the fact that Peter Parker and Spider-Man might be the same. So it was a weird spell. So there is a precedence in comics. You might see something like that happen one day. Do I think it's the case here? No, I just wanted to say magic tattoo.
And the other thing that got me thinking is he's sporting like the same goatee or, you know, rough scruff or something like that.
And the mole.
Yeah.
I know with the whole Clark Kent Superman thing, it's more than just like the glasses. It's mannerisms and such. But, you know, you see the Green Arrow up close and the mayor doesn't shave and the Green Arrow doesn't shave and all this type of stuff.
But to be fair, though, how many people see the Green Arrow up close? other than the people whose asses he kicks.
I was just going to say, it's the people that he actually hangs upside down and drops off buildings. Then they don't walk away from. So those people know. They know.
I don't know. Have you guys watched Legends?
No.
Not this week yet.
Oh, okay. Then I won't. Because somebody figured out something, so I won't spoil it for anybody.
There's a ton I have to catch up on, and stuff just keeps happening in my life, and I haven't been able to catch up. I'm really looking forward to start to catch up this weekend. Hopefully, that will happen. Guys, I watched this episode, and the meeting between Green Arrow and Detective Billy Malone, what was that about again? I totally missed it, did not comprehend what was going on. Somebody clue me in on what happened there.
So, Green Arrow gets a call. Felicity sees like this call and he says like there's a B&E and Green Arrow goes and there he is, who's Felicity's boyfriend. And he's like, look, I don't have your email. I don't know how to get in contact with you, but I want you to know that this Prometheus person wants to kill you and such. So somehow, because he said like word on the street. So I thought that was an interesting aside.
Maybe he's Prometheus.
Yeah, could be. But that goes against your call, Chris.
I wasn't legit in my call. I was just throwing out theories because that's what I do.
Oh, you throw out theories you're pretty sure of.
Sure.
All right. As we mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, we do speculate quite a bit. So we may get stuff right. We may not. But if you have a call as to who Prometheus is, we would love to hear you. And you can give us a voicemail, you can send us a tweet, you can send me an email, StargatePioneer@GunnaGeek.com, or you can check us on our Facebook page. Guys, what about that Brafa initiation? Because it's basically initiation, right? I don't think this is another trial, is it?
Step two of three of his trials, I guess, was what this was.
Oh, so he's got one more coming.
Yes. His matter of trust here, again, feeding back into the episode titles, you've got to let these guys hack up your back and trust that they're not going to kill you, despite the fact they sort of almost tried to kill you before.
Well, they're going to be your brothers now because you started to prove yourself.
I think he's going to have to kill for one of his brothers. I think that's what's going to happen here.
He'll do it.
Mm-hmm. Sure he will.
It'd be interesting to know who it is, though, who he's got to kill.
That will be. I'm not sure. I don't have any theories yet, though.
No idea. Who else do we know that's in Russia right now? We don't really know.
It beats me at this point.
Yeah.
So, in case you have a hankering to actually put an official stamp at it, there is a place where you can see the arrowcave.com now. So, just go to arrowcave.com and you can see what we mean by Arrow Cave.
You're going to love it. I guarantee it.
As well as such domains as #itsallconnected.com and verifiedcodygoff.com. Check all those out.
What is it? Arrowcave?
Arrowcave.com.
The suspense.
Yes. Her webpage is loading. Chris, what else do we have with the episode?
I want to talk about Derek Sampson, who was Cody Rhodes' character. And I really enjoyed having Cody Rhodes in here. He has a physical presence that is very good for fight scenes and things like that. And here's the thing that's really mind-blowing. When you go back to WWE, he was considered one of the smaller guys because he's only like 6'3", 6'2". So that's kind of small in comparison to things. Then you have him here and I'm like, dude, he looks big compared to a lot of these guys. He and Oliver Queen are both of comparable size. And I was like, he was pretty cool. I want to see more of Derek Sampson going forward. I bought it. I really liked it. I think you could start seeing Cody Rhodes show up in more TV shows and things now.
So he was dead. Do you think he's going to heal? Do you think his tendons are going to heal?
Well, I don't think he truly died. It was just he appeared to be dead to the technicians, is what Felicity had said.
Well, then he comes back, but then you can get your tendons repaired.
They've got good health care up in Canada, man.
Yeah, and it's free.
Yeah, it's free. In all seriousness, he'll probably be patched up because remember, he'd gotten shot and beat up and all of the holes in his body seemed to have healed up as the show was going by. So maybe he has some kind of accelerated healing in addition to the fact that he can't feel pain.
Yep. So going back to the DA, Adrian Chase, they met 12 years ago. Oliver has no idea about the meeting. I think there's some animosity there. I think there's a vendetta. I'm pretty sure.
Well, he doesn't hold any grudges that Oliver Queen took his girl.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that one before.
I said I was sorry, SP. Come on. Am I ever going to live it down?
No, be wary of your Christmas present this year. That's all I got to say.
Is it going to be a flaming bag of poo again?
Yeah, it might be more than one this year.
Yes, free fuel.
All right. Do you guys have anything else of the episode that we haven't discussed yet?
I can't think of anything.
Michelle?
I'm good.
Michelle, what do we got in our sights next week?
Next week is episode 4 of season 5, Penance. Oliver and Lila team up on a secret mission for Diggle. Felicity finds out and disapproves of the plan and opts to stay behind. When Tobias Church launches a deadly assault against the city, Felicity must decide if she wants to send the recruits out sans the Green Arrow. Director is Dermot Downs, and the writers are Brian Ford Sullivan and Oscar Balderrama.
I'm loving these names. We haven't had a dud so far. All proven a creative team so far this year. That is awesome.
It's true. Now, you guys do know, each week, if you've been listening to the podcast for all, you've heard an evolution of what originally started out as the Bat Checklist, which then kind of turned into the DC Easter Egg and Pop Culture Reference Checklist, where they like to put some cool little Easter eggs in each episode of Arrow anymore, and the folks over at comicbook.com do a great job of finding those Easter eggs, and we like to try and recap some of the best ones when we go through the episode. So, Michelle, let's start off with you. What's the first Easter egg we're talking about?
A Matter of Trust is the name of a Billy Joel song. Mark Guggenheim is a huge Billy Joel song, and the song's title just happens to fit this episode's theme.
Mark Guggenheim is a huge Billy Joel fan. Mike Guggenheim is a huge Billy Joel song.
I'm sorry, Mr. Guggenheim.
Yes, we are totally sorry. You're welcome on the podcast anytime, Mr. Guggenheim.
And you can yell at me.
Chris, what do we got next?
So we sort of touched on this one earlier. The drug that's being sold in Star City right now is called Stardust. If you aren't familiar, Cody Rhodes' stage name for the last 2 years he was in the WWE was Stardust. So it was pretty cool to have him have a reference, rather, to that character he had been portraying. And like we'd mentioned before, he and Stephen Amell had had a long simmering feud that culminated in a match at WWE SummerSlam last year. And it was a lot of fun, the Stardust character fighting Stephen Amell.
And we have another hit here from Cody Reynolds, right, Chris?
Cody Reynolds, yes. So we've referenced him as Cody Rhodes because his father is Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream you might know him as. His brother is Dustin Rhodes, rather, who you know as Gold Dust. Well, Rhodes is a stage name for this entire family. Their true last name is Runnels. He's going by his actual name here because a little insider stuff on wrestling here. He doesn't own the trademark to the name Cody Rhodes anymore. So once he left the WWE, he reverted to being called Cody as his stage name in TNA because our friend Verified Cody Goff hadn't trademarked that. And he's going by his true name, Cody Runnels, for acting purposes, much like you saw The Rock go by Dwayne Johnson early in his career.
Till he got enough money to buy The Rock trademark back.
He might have had it. I don't remember what his deal was with WWE on The Rock stuff, but regardless, he makes enough money, he could have just bought it from them.
Mm-hmm. So the next one we have is John Jr. This is the first on-camera reference to John Jiggle Jr. in Arrow. Last week on The Flash, fans learned, so I'm crossing the streams here, guys, but fans learned that John Diggle, friend and former bodyguard to Oliver Queen, has a son, and that was a surprise. That's right. Barry Allen's excellent Flashpoint adventure through time created the unintended consequence of giving John Diggle a son. We talked about it during the episode. John Diggle Jr. rather than the daughter, Sarah Diggle. Although Sarah might still be around, we don't know yet. Fans got to know after she was born in season 3 of the hit CW drama.
Can we just call it Barry and Eobard's excellent adventure from this point forward?
Think it would be awesome. There's going to be something that happens between those two. It's going to be a fun ride.
Very much so.
We got Deadshot back. A member of the Suicide Squad and the Deadly Assassin, long thought had to have murdered John Diggle's brother, showed up in a vision to Dig this week, haunting him for killing Andy himself last season. Yeah, even though it was a vision, it was good to see him.
And teasing all of us faithful fans, we might get the Suicide Squad back for real.
Oh, that was so cool.
Urgh, damn you for tricking me. So next Easter egg, we have Susan Williams. In the comics, she's the sister-in-law of Hal Jordan, who we all know as the Earth Green Lantern, the Green Lantern of Sector, what is it, 2187, I think, is the Earth Sector.
Yep.
She, Susan Williams, is created by John Broome and Gil Kane in the early days of the Silver Age Green Lantern titles. She was a bit of a rabble-rouser back then and ended up in a relationship with one of the Jordan brothers while trying to figure out just who the Green Lantern was.
And that never works out well when you try to figure out who a superhero is. I don't get it. Why do people even do that? Just go about your lives and just trust that they're there to help.
But are they? Sometimes they go bad. Remember how Jordan did go bad and destroyed all of Coast City at one point in time?
No, I don't remember that because I haven't read those comics. Thanks for spoiling it for me, Chris.
It's kind of a well-known fact in DC history that he becomes Parallax, and then it gets retconned.
I have met Parallax because Parallax is in the new DC Rebirth, Hal Jordan and the Green Lanterns.
And he was in the Craptastic movie.
Oh, you just had to bring that up, didn't you?
I can never forget because one of my co-hosts used to podcast with the Green Lantern poster on their back wall for like 2 years. So if I had to suffer with constant reminders of Green Lantern, you all do too.
I need to get the poster and put it right here for you from now on. That is what I'm going to do from now on for the Starling Tribune.
I might hate you a little bit right now.
You could go ahead and do that. On to the next DC Easter egg or pop culture DC Easter egg. Falling into a vat of chemicals is similar to the origin of the Joker. And apparently Harley Quinn now too, according to Suicide Squad.
Yeah. And then we talked about him before, Adrian Chase, introduced this week. The hot-headed, good-looking. Okay, good-looking is relative. So if you found him good-looking, congratulations. And I'm like, eh. Okay, so this district attorney is actually better known as Vigilante in the comics, created during Marv Wolfman's time on the new Teen Titans. Vigilante in the comics is a former New York district attorney who set on the path of justice after his family is killed by the mob. The CW describes him similarly. Chase is Star City's new district attorney and an ally of Mayor Oliver Queen, who aims to clean up the streets through the legal system.
Fancy, fancy. Oh, and guys, one of the best points that we get is Easter egg. You have failed this city. Just came back.
Yes!
I still love that line. It's so good. I really wish he said it more when he shot people in the knee.
That is so awesome. I forgot about that. You have failed this city. And I happen to like the Lethal Weapon movies. So when he started doing the lighter thing, Stardust started doing the lighter thing underneath his arm. That's totally Gary Busey from Lethal Weapon. Love that. And lots of Lethal Weapon quotes in my head, but I will spare you from them for now.
Thank you.
I'm just really happy Flashpoint didn't erase Gary Busey because he is a vital part of our American fabric. And another Easter egg, Terry Sloan, this week, we finally got to see Curtis suit up, going into the field in his Mr. Terrific costume for the first time. He hasn't yet identified himself using the Mr. Terrific name, although he did name check Terry Sloan, the Golden Age Mr. Terrific from the comics, as his inspiration, and the inspiration for his Fair Play jacket he wears.
Does anybody else think the Fair Play jacket is a bit tight on him, a bit small?
Well, welcome to a CW show.
Okay. Well, I mean, I thought it was even short. Like, it didn't even cover what a jacket should cover. I mean, is that the Fair Play Mr. Terrific costume?
I'm not super familiar with Mr. Terrific right now. We will have to defer to Neil on this one.
Neil, we need you back, buddy. And for those of you wondering, Neil has not left the podcast. He is just taking a short sabbatical. He will be back in November 2016.
He's on extended assignment in Coast City.
Or in Star City, or in National City, or in, yeah, he lives in Storybrook, ladies and gentlemen.
Insert adjective here, story.
Moving on to the next one. Yes, we got a trope of a cool guy walking towards the camera with an explosion in the background. We've already talked about it, but yes, it is a pop culture reference.
Cool guys don't look at explosions. Go watch the video on YouTube. Then come back and finish the podcast. Next trope, we touched on this one also. When they're in the elevator, Oliver makes a mention to Wild Dog that he thinks the hockey mask is cool because we all know Stephen Amell was Casey Jones in the last Ninja Turtles movie, whose trademark gear when he fights crime is a hockey mask.
And finally, Michelle, we get our canon back. We've been calling it this for years. What do we got?
Curtis makes Arrow Cave canon. Thank you, Curtis. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Curtis. Are you guys ready to get into some news?
News time. Wrong show. News time.
News time. All right, we've got some news stories that we're going to quickly go through tonight. First of all, Michelle, you're up.
Arrowverse crossover is very, very faithful to DC's Invasion. Mark Guggenheim. See, I can do it. Promises that the crossover will be faithful to the story in the comics. In the comics, the Dominators assemble a coalition of extraterrestrial races to invade Earth with the goal of eliminating the threat posed by metahumans. Unknown to their allies, the Dominators intend to harness the metagene and create their own army of metahumans. Guggenheim says that the crossover will be just big, bombastic, and lots of huge action.
We also have a news story about Mark Guggenheim revealing Captain Cold's Legends return, right, Chris?
That's right. Mark Guggenheim discussed Captain Cold's return to Legends, which will be the show's mid-season finale, we found at episode 208. But just how he returns has not been revealed. As we've known, Captain Cold will be part of the Legion of Doom, and the 100th episode of Arrow promises to be huge, with appearances by John Barrowman as Malcolm Merlyn, Neil McDonough as Damian Dark, and it's all part of the crossover, so lots of cool stuff coming. Captain Cold returning, we all knew it would happen, but it's going to be great to see.
Love those cross DC TV show contracts. Then also, Michelle, we have a synopsis for one of the new Arrow episodes coming at us, Human Target.
The November 2nd episode is titled Human Target. In this episode, Oliver will call an old friend for help. Will Travel, who's from Jessica Jones, will play Christopher Chance, a.k.a. the Human Target, a private investigator and bodyguard who assumes the identities of clients marked for assassination. This is not the Human Target's first TV appearance. Rick Springfield, the musician, I actually know who he is, that's how old I am,
wow,
starred as Christopher Chance on a short-lived drama that aired in 1992 on ABC, and Fox aired as an adaptation in 2011, which starred Mark Valley, and is something that I watched. And I liked the show. I was so disappointed it was canceled, and I should not have been shocked because it was a Fox show. Oh, Fox, you did it to me again.
Fox definitely does it. I won't watch a show in the first season on Fox because I know they're just going to cancel it because they're going to air it out of order and cancel it, and I'll just be disappointed. So I didn't watch Human Target. Sorry, folks. I was part of the problem.
I watched the first episode, didn't care for it, so I'm part of the problem too.
Well, Chris, since you're part of the problem, let's move on to some general DC TV news, and let's talk about Mirror Master.
I really wanted this news story because when I first started reading Flash comics, it was one of the arcs in the early 90s where they established the origin of Kid Flash, and one of the very first villains that he fought against in this was the Mirror Master. So, brought back fond memories for him. We know the Mirror Master's debuting in Flash. It was shown off in a new promo. Rogues are back for next week's episode of The Flash entitled The New Rogues, and as the episode is titled, star-crossed actor Grey Damon makes his DC Comics debut as the infamous Mirror Master. I'm so excited, and we'll also get to see some other folks such as The Top, and some dude named Captain Cold. I don't know if you guys know who that is.
No. Remind us who Captain Cold is again.
He's some dude with a freeze gun. He was kind of heroic and then got killed, and basically he's no longer heroic because that doesn't happen now.
Oh, the last kiss, though. Oh, that was awesome. Awesome television there.
It really was. So Mirror Master is going to be showing up next week in Flash with a variety of rogues. I want to see it so bad. And for those that aren't familiar with his powers, just wait and watch the episode. You'll have a lot of fun with it.
It's definitely going to be fun. Can't wait to get caught up. Talking about other DC shows, Michelle, we got some disappointing ratings information.
Yeah, Legends of Tomorrow ratings dip for season 2 premiere. It scored just a 0.6 in the key 18 to 49 demographic and 1.84 million viewers. The show is up against football and baseball. We have an election. It's really tough. You know, some of our shows are up against like debates. Like there was a debate last night. And again, baseball, football. Like there's a football show. There's football tonight. And there's also this TV show called This Is Us on NBC that is killing everybody because everybody wants to watch that type of a show. Hopefully, once all this stuff settles, we get people coming back and watching our shows.
And don't forget, there is the CW app, which you can get the latest episode on when you're commuting through your phone, your mobile device, or on the go. So I think for free, right after the episode airs, pretty much. So I think that factors into it as well. And I'm hoping that the advertisers, because you cannot fast forward through the commercials. So I'm hoping the advertisers stick with all of the ratings information, including the plays that they get online. Looking forward to seeing some broader information from CW. If they're smart, they'll start releasing some of that stuff. And talking about smart and CW, just how are they going to get CW Supergirl into the crossover, Chris? How's that going to happen?
So Mark Guggenheim has been making the rounds, doing all sorts of interviews. He did say, and we've all known, the 100th episode of Arrow is part three of the crossover between all of the CW shows. Mark Guggenheim did an interview talking about how Supergirl is going to come in. In that interview, he said, last year, Supergirl established that the Flash was able to make his way to what I call Earth CBS. And it stands to reason that with the proper breach technology, the reverse can happen. Once the heroes realize that they're up against aliens, they decide they need an alien on their side. And fortunately, Barry knows a really nice one. I don't think it's a big shock that between Barry and Cisco, and all of their experiences with Earth 2 and the multiverse, they can just pluck her from Earth CBS.
Kind of a cop-out. I've talked about it before, but I'm looking forward to see Melissa in the Berlantiverse, I guess, because she's not part of it right now.
We're going to have to call it the CW, or Earth CW, I guess.
Talking about Earth CW, we have some news about Caitlin Snow's relationship with her mom.
Yes, this is a little bit of a Flash spoiler. In an upcoming episode, we will meet Caitlin's mother, Dr. Tenhausen, guest star Susan Walters, a renowned biomedical researcher. Caitlin will seek out her mother's help because this is the spoiler. She is transforming into Killer Frost, which I have to say, thanks, Barry. Because this is all connected to Flashpoint and how he has really changed the team. He's really changed their dynamic. He's changed not only Caitlin could be Killer Frost. Now, Cisco is still Vibe, but the dynamic between them all is very different.
What I've seen so far this season really makes me groan. And I know I should be all excited about it, but really, it's not the characters that I have grown accustomed to. And therefore, I don't like it because I'm a creature of habit. I'm an engineer.
That's the tough thing. They built the show around those relationship between the characters, and then you go and change it, and it just feels weird. It's not like coming and seeing your good friends on TV anymore. You're like, it's Invasion of the Body Snatchers here, guys. Who is this? This isn't my Cisco. This isn't my Caitlin. I don't understand what's going on. Why? And they're starting to get more on track with this week's Flash. You're starting to get a little more of the old feeling of things to it, but there's still those lingering, this is different, and I'm not sure why, and it doesn't feel right.
That's right. Although one particular thing from Flashpoint, I think has you a little giddy, or a possibility from Flashpoint has you a little giddy, Chris.
This is super exciting. So for those of you guys that don't know, I'm a big fan of Mark Hamill. Yes, Luke Skywalker, the Joker, the Hobgoblin, various characters from the Jay and Silent Bob universe. Mark Hamill, I think, is an astounding voice actor, and I enjoy anything he does on screen. And we have seen him as the Trickster in The Flash. So Mark Hamill was spotted on the set of The Flash, looking decidedly Joker-esque. Considering The Flash is currently exploring an alternate timeline in its Flashpoint season, it's possible this might be a Joker-inspired alternate version of the Trickster, or maybe fans might just finally get their wish and see Hamill take the Clown Prince of Crime into live action. If you're in the show notes right now, there's a picture from Newsarama.com where I got this story of Mark Hamill in his Earth 2 Trickster costume, perhaps. It is very Joker-esque. I don't think it actually is the Joker, but it is very different from the Trickster we've met.
Oh, man. If that's the Joker, he could be my new favorite Joker right there.
He already is the Joker, man.
Well, I know, but on screen, on live action.
Anytime I read a Batman comic, that's the Joker's voice anymore.
Right, right. And he does it very well, and that's awesome. And that's probably the reason why you were trying to watch Sequest DSV. That just occurred to me right now, because Mark Hamill was in it.
Was he really? I forgot about that.
Yeah, he is later on. It's bad.
It's season two, right? Because I'm not going to watch season two.
And well, that part of season two is probably okay.
Okay, fair enough.
Michelle, round us out with a couple of your news stories, starting on whether or not Cat Grant knows about Supergirl's secret identity.
Okay, so this article, again, I'm going to reveal a spoiler for Supergirl. One of the things, like, if you've watched season one and into season two, is like, does Cat know if Supergirl is Kara? It's been a lively little, does she not? You know, and I really like how the show has left it up in the air. The article also covers why the writers have backed off from the Jimmy Kara romance. They really sort of talked about how they got new writers and they started to take new relationships in different ways. But I'm glad they backed off from that. and Kara's new boss, Snap Picard, is different from Kat. Basically, Kara has her own Perry White, and the tension between Mon-El and Kara is also discussed.
Well,
interesting.
Can go ahead and catch that story in the show notes. Michelle, you have the last... Matter of fact, I almost want to give this to Chris because it's discussing his favorite store hot topic.
I did actually see this news story.
But I'm going to give it to Michelle because she's the one who put it in the show notes.
So I just stumbled upon this before we went to podcast. And Hot Topic is introducing jackets based on the DC TV shows, including Gotham, which is a lame one because it's just a black jacket with a hoodie with ears. That's lame. There is one based on the White Canary, but I mean, it's a stylish white jacket, but nah. There's a Green Arrow one where, gee, it's a green one with a hood. The Flash one has a nice symbol of the Flash on the front, but there's lightning bolts pointing to your butt and crotch. I do not. The best one is the hoodie for Supergirl.
Mm-hmm.
It is a nice blue. You have the Supergirl emblem. And then the hood unzips to be like a little cape, and it's red. That is so cool. These are going to go for $70 to $80. And that Supergirl one looks almost worth it.
Yeah, the Green Arrow would be good, like if you're doing a full cosplay maybe, but just the jacket alone is kind of meh.
It's just a hoodie.
Yeah. I mean, do like the White Canary one, but I did watch season one of Gotham, and that Selina jacket is spot on. It's probably the closest to what you see on screen out of all of them. So that's pretty cool. Maybe the White Canary as well, but those two are the most realistic. But I would agree, if I was going to buy one, I would buy the Supergirl one for my daughter. I know she would. Matter of fact, I might do that. Sorry, if you're listening to this, I just ruined your Christmas present idea.
Edit it out.
Edit.
I might buy it for my beep.
Thank you, Stargate. I didn't know you were going to buy that for me. That's
you're
awesome.
Welcome. Let's move on into comics and toy news. Michelle, what do you got for us?
All right. So Batman DC set a top comic book sales chart again in September. DC sales leader again, third consecutive month. DC also has 8 out of top 10 comic books. Batman number 6, All-Star Batman number 2, Batman number 7, Justice League number 4, Trinity number 1, Supergirl number 1, Suicide Squad number 2, and Justice League number 5. That was, 8 out of 10. Rounding out the top 10 was Civil War number 5 and The Walking Dead 158. So DC is dominating the comic book sales charts.
They might be, Marvel is starting the Marvel Now right now, and I could see them picking up a few sales here and there. It's got some intriguing parts. DC, even though they're just dominating the sales charts, we discussed this off mic. Some of their series are starting to wane a little bit, and we've discussed which ones they were. We're not going to talk about that right now, but I'm not worried about them, but they're going to start to cull the herd on what their top performers are versus what their middle of the road performers are. So just keep in tune with that as these sales numbers continue to come out, as they do, because everybody looks at the entertainment industry for how much money they're making. So we also have news of action figures.
Yes, girls, women, we don't have a lot of action figures for us, or just people in general who love female superheroes. So DC's new action figures include Supergirl, which finally looks like Melissa Benoist. So it's a much better sculpt than what was seen before. And we're going to get Vixen and Wonder Woman. And they look so good. And it's just so nice to have, female superheroes for everybody to enjoy.
That'll be awesome. So thank you very much for all the news stories, guys. And if you have heard a news story that you're interested in, the links will be in the show notes at starlingtribune.com. Michelle, you have started a live tweet, and we've gotten some feedback from that. We won't go over it this week, but if you're into live tweeting any of the DC TV shows, pay attention to the @StarlingTribune Twitter account. Michelle is doing most of those this fall. There's a couple of times that she'll have to miss, but go ahead and check the Twitter stream out live on the East Coast airing the East Coast and Central Time Zone airing of the shows. Michelle, you want to say anything about all the great live tweets?
It's so much fun just to like interact with everybody who's like watching at the same time. How sometimes we just notice the certain things and such. So it's really, I'm really beginning to like it. And I realize I'm beginning to like it so much because I get it. It's like watching TV with my mom. We would always talk back to the television. And so I realized that that's what I'm doing with the Twitter. I'm just like, hey, I want to comment on that instead of talking, be like talking to everybody on Twitter. It's becoming really fun.
Yeah, it's still a mainstay of watching live TV. Twitter live tweeting has become part of that. And unfortunately, for those people that haven't seen the episodes, they kind of shy away from the Twitter feeds for a while. But hey, if you're into it, it is a joy. And Michelle is doing that under at Starling Tribune. She also has another Twitter account that's personal, and that's at Michelle Ely. And you can find her there anytime. Chris, we are part of a geeky network. GonnaGeek.com. I'm told GotchaGeek.com is also available. It's where you see our Geeks.live stream, but there's a whole host of other podcasts. Let's tell the folks about one this week.
That's right. Like SP said, each week we try to highlight one specific podcast from the network, which you can go find all that stuff at GonnaGeekNetwork.com. And this week I want to talk to you guys about episode 50, the big 5-0 of better podcasting, entitled SP's Golden Rules of Hobby Podcasting. Uh-huh. If you're considering starting a podcast, Gunna Geek Network's Stargate Pioneer has developed a list of considerations which he deems his Golden Rules of Hobby Podcasting. Check out this in episode 50 of Better Podcasting, available at geeks.link/BP50. And while you're there, check out all the other awesome shows that make up the Gunna Geek Network. Feel free to drop in, check in, anything. We've got something for whatever your geeky tastes are. GunnaGeekNetwork.com. So as we're wrapping things up, I do want to thank everyone who did listen or watch the show live in the Geeks.live chat room. I've seen Steven in there. I've seen Suncast in there. And also a huge thank you to anyone that has replayed the video at a later date or downloaded the podcasts or listened to replays on Spreaker or anywhere. Thank you so much for listening.
And if you're listening, tell all the other listeners you know that they can join in live on Thursdays, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern on www.geeks.live. Thank you very much to our video editor, Chris, because I don't have to do it. Thank you very much, Chris, and all of the fans of the show. And don't forget, after the show, we're going to find a way to bring our listeners in so they can interact with us and just hang out and just hang with us, folks. We'll get this figured out.
We can put a link in the chat room and you guys can drop in after the show.
Yeah, so just hang in for that. We will be ramping that up in the coming weeks.
You can watch the next live show on the Gunna Geek Network over on Geeks.live. The next live show on the network is Better Podcasting, Friday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Please go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. We really appreciate it. Like us on Facebook and YouTube, and badger us on Twitter. You can find all of our contact information on the Gunna Geek Network at GunnaGeekNetwork.com, where you can check out our forums and other shows. If you want to share your thoughts, head on over to our Facebook page, send in a tweet, or you can call us at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283.
That was an amazing episode, and thank you very much for recording it with me, Michelle and Chris. I think that wraps it up for another week. Any last words as we sign up and open up the chat room to our live listeners? At the Chris Farrell.
Hashtag Flashpoint is kind of a bummer.
At Michelle Ely.
Hashtag I know his name is Mark.
And I'm at Stargate Pioneer saying hashtag SP is always wrong. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at Incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.